Hello, I'm Eamon.
I'm Conrad.
I'm John.
And we are...
Mega City Film Club!
It's the Film Club, we're back, and we're in my favourite sort of incarnation of the Film Club. It's Old School Film Club, where we're looking at some older films, and we have the welcome return of John Caro from Portsmouth University, who was last with us in episode 232, when we did the wonderful double bill of Death Race 2000, and of course, the hard-nosed American copper to end all American coppers, Dirty Harry from 1971. And John, I'm just going to get straight into it because we're sticking with Cops on the Edge, are we not?
Yes, very much so. Yeah.
Conrad, take us into...
Film One, The Sweetie.
This is from 1977, directed by David Weeks, written by Ranald Graham, David Wicks and Ted Childs, starring John Thor, Dennis Waterman, Ian Bannon, Barry Foster and Diane Keane. John... Now, this is, of course, a cinematic outing for a TV show. We need some background, particularly for American listeners. Can you fill us in on the TV show, first of all?
Yeah, so I was doing a little bit of research on this. So it was made by a company, the TV show that the films are a spin-off from, was made by a group called Houston Films. And Houston Films were the film wing of Thames Television, the old ITV company when it was much more sort of regional based. So they did a series called like a play of the week thing. I think Armchair Cinema. They did a pilot called Regan, which featured John Thor as Regan, Dennis Waterman as Carter. Or the boss's name, isn't it? Haskins, who crops up.
Yes.
So it was kind of like a backdoor pilot. And that was the one that got picked up, turned into a series. The big deal about Houston Films is they shot on film, so instead of video. So they had this, I was trying to think of the right word, prestige. That's the right word. But they had this kind of a prestige thing because they were shot on film. So the Sweeney being, the series starts from the pilot, Sweeney being Cockney rhyming slang for flying squad. So Sweeney Todd flying squad. So being the Cockney rhyming slang. I thought that would be a chance for Conrad to give us some, you know, Cockney.
Oh, absolutely. Listen, I'm warming up.
And it runs for four, do we say series or seasons now? Basically, yeah. It goes from 75 to 78. Very much known for its theme tune. Very known for being sort of gritty, bleak. The goodies, the soap are anti-heroes, working-class protagonists, don't always win. It would have quite sort of downbeat endings. Ian Kennedy Martin, I should mention, is the creator, and his brother is Troy Kennedy Martin, who did things like Kelly's Heroes and The Italian Job and Zed Cars,
which was, yeah. Edge of Darkness.
So they're, you know, they're quite, quite up there in the kind of, I don't know, cinema, filmmaking sort of, they're very well known for that anyway. So, yeah. And obviously the show's very popular, so... They have the idea of doing some spin-off movies that are produced during the run as well.
Can I just sum up the series with that sort of rhyming catchphrase of fags, blags, slags and jags?
Yeah.
It was car chases. It was no-nonsense British cops. An awful lot of alcohol and tobacco use.
Yeah, alcohol, smoking, what did you say? Punch-ups in abandoned industrial estates and warehouses, that kind of...
I compared it to the American show Starsky and Hutch, where they were always driving down alleyways, knocking over piles of boxes, and then pulling bad guys out of cars for a punch-up, Conrad. You might have seen some Starsky and Hutch.
I've seen, Starsky and Hutch, I sort of like, because of the swinging theme song, also something like the Rockford Files is sort of an American show I sort of associated with also, where like every episode, like there's sort of some punches. Every episode there's maybe like a mild car chase and like a crash or something like that. Like sort of, it's sort of contractually obligated in every episode that it has to happen, you know, something like that has to happen at least once.
Yeah. Now, before I get John to sum up or to give us a synopsis of the film version, John, is it the pilot Regan where he says he's famous, what becomes sort of like almost the catchphrase of the series? Is that where it first comes out?
Yeah, I think it's almost, it is on, I don't know if you guys had the chance to look at it, but it's really interesting pilot Regan. Right.
I'm going to get Conrad to give us his version of the, of the line, which is the name of our recording room at the moment. Conrad, go for it.
Oh, wait, is it? Get your pants on, Mick. You're nicked.
I think it's almost the first thing he says.
Yeah.
It's literally it's one of the first or second things he says. The other one, the other catchphrase that people said a lot, what was it, is, "We're the Sweeney and we haven't had our dinner." So I guess that made them a bit more hangry. I don't know.
So it's very successful as a TV show. They obviously get it to the big screen. So we're in 1977. What do they do, or how do they set up the movie for us, John?
Well, the movie is supposedly, and we probably don't want to get too bogged down by this, but it's supposedly based on the Profumo affair.
Right.
There was a big political, well, there is a movie called Scandal about the Profumo affair. But so it's supposedly based on that, which is a bit odd, given that the Sweeney show is supposed to be about catching bank robbers.
Yep.
Or blaggers.
Yeah.
As I've learned they were called in the second movie.
So it's all blaggers versus rozzers.
But they so it kind of sort of does this, it sort of becomes this weird sort of political thriller almost, doesn't it? The first film. So anyway, just to try and be as quickly as possible, we've got it starts off with a sex worker being murdered, and that's made to look like a suicide by what turns out to be Barry Foster playing Elliot McQueen, who is, sorry, Conrad, an evil American.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. 100% evil American. Yeah.
He's the kind of media advisor or the press secretary of the British Energy Secretary. And anyway, it's all part of a plot, which I must admit I couldn't quite follow sometimes, but it's all part of a plot to blackmail the Energy Secretary into fixing the price of oil to the benefit of multinational corrupted.
Like North Coast oil has gotten England into OPEC, and now they've got the deciding vote.
Yes,
the price of oil or something.
And I'm looking at the notes and thinking, did I dream this? But anyway, and Carter and our heroes, Regan and Carter, get involved in uncovering this conspiracy. Regan goes rogue, as you said, Eamon. He's kind of gets thrown out of the police to pursue the case. So basically, our heroes or anti-heroes, I guess I should say, they uncover the conspiracy. They become targets of McQueen themselves by the delightfully named hitman Johnson & Johnson. If you pick that up, that amused me. And anyway, it all turns out it was all for naught because the British Secret Service were aware of the plot all along.
Right.
Regan isn't happy with this because they're going to let McQueen go because he's too powerful to arrest. And Regan isn't happy with this. So he kind of interferes with their plans and tries to arrest McQueen at the end. And McQueen makes a run for it and gets assassinated by his own hitmen, Johnson & Johnson. And then it ends with that delightful last line. I should really be letting Connery Conrad do these, is it's Carter saying, "They didn't kill him, you did." Yeah.
So
does that make sense? I don't know.
Yes, well, they've brought the Sweeney to the screen. They've given them a bigger case with more political implications than just bank robbers. As you say, Jack Regan at one point gets framed for something. So you get that classic scene of his chief saying, "I want your warrant card and your truncheon." For Conrad's, translate for Conrad, your badge and your gun.
Full give me your badge and gun situation. I like that. I like a good, that's my favorite moment in any Cop on the Edge movie or show or something like that, you know.
Now, Conrad, we know we set you up to watch this film and you sat down to watch it with your dad. So here we are.
I was expecting a good bit of fun, guys. All right. I was expecting some car chases and like some shootouts and like some English accents and stuff like that. This movie's a bummer. You know, I can't like John, your recap is excellent, but it doesn't really do a great job of explaining why this movie is weird and uncomfortable to watch with your dad on like a summer afternoon. But it is.
That's very true. We were talking a little bit before, like the involvement of the sex workers, and that's quite the gender politics. Is there any women in the film that actually survive to the end?
There's a lot of bystander damage as well, isn't there? Mm-hmm. When Regan and Diane Keane, when Regan and Diane Keane are on the run. All sorts of people are taken out as the assassins are chasing them, aren't they?
Yeah.
I thought the opening sequence where Regan and Carter turn up late for work, pretty drunk from the night before, they've seen off their Concorde air stewardess with an inappropriate use of a police car to take her to the airport, and they immediately tool up with guns and go out on an op to snatch up a gang in the industrial estate. So the cars squeal, there's a punch up, and then they all go back to the yard for more whiskey. And then, of course, as you say, the political intrigue plot takes off and we get Regan, as we say, a going rogue. Conrad, hard-nosed coppers in the 70s. What did your dad make of it?
I mean, we were holding on for dear life by the end of it. You know, and mostly just kind of oh, the soundtrack's pretty rocking. Like, this is good. Like, you know, we had some fun at, of course, like Big Book of British Smiles and like haircuts and things like that. You know, I think, you know, through both these movies, you can see Carter, Dennis Waterman's sort of hairline, like struggling to survive with his sort of, you know, 70s Han Solo haircut or whatever. But like, we had a lot, like both, like some trouble with, kind of the international foreign intrigue plot was kind of like, wait, what? Who are these people? Mm-hmm. What's going on? And like, you know, I found this on the show because I couldn't find the pilot. I watched a couple episodes of the Sweeney show as well. You know, they don't really do a good job of saying like, this is the Sweeney. This is what it is. This is what it's supposed to be. You know, like, here's its role within Scotland Yard. Here's who these guys, you know, here's who we are, Regan and Carter, you know? Mm-hmm. And I guess that makes sense for a movie version of a TV show. Presumably you'd have watched you wouldn't watch this without watching the TV show. And you'd kind of know sort of through the pilot, maybe through just sort of cultural osmosis what the Sweeney is, I guess. But as is so often the case when I'm sort of dumped into these British things, I'm sort of like trying to pick things up and stuff like that. You know, we also joked about John Thaw's raw animal magnetism. You know, like there's a second sex worker that he just sort of, you know, in between berating her like for her profession, also yeah. manages to have an affair with and stuff like that. It's
yeah, that was like, that was bizarre. He literally drags her into danger. He's the one that's responsible for her being killed. You know, spoiler alert.
Absolutely.
But and then sort of acts all offended when he finds out that she is a sex worker. This is really bizarre.
Yeah, and then, yeah. He gets offended when he finds out she's a sex worker. Then they like have it. Then they do it. Then when he finds out further details of her sex worker, he's like, "How could you?" She's like, "We've already done this scene, dude. Like, I don't know what to tell you. You know."
Yeah, it's very.
So one of the things from both the Sweeney on TV and on cinema, their follow-up series Minder for Dennis Waterman and Morse, of course, Inspector Morse for John Thorpe. One of the things we've been discussing is apparently the sexual attractiveness of John Thorpe and Dennis Waterman in the 70s and beyond.
Undefeatable.
And because they don't seem in great shape, they drink and smoke all the time.
Heroically,
And they are, particularly in Jack Regan's case, perpetually miserable and grumpy about everything. It seems odd that they that the air stewardesses they're pursuing seem to, a lot of them seem to say yes, apparently. It's a mystery, John, isn't it?
Must be the thrill, I don't know, because they're, I don't know, is the idea because they're the Sweeney, because they're police, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm a copper is seemingly a killer pickup line in the mid-70s, I guess.
What's interesting is the Regan pilot, that is kind of different. That was an interesting one because I don't know if you all know her, Conrad. In that, it sets up very much that Regan is divorced, unhappily divorced, and he's seeing his girlfriend who dumps him eventually is played by Maureen Lipman.
Oh, right.
Which is interesting. And she's working in the film industry or something odd, you know, I guess so they could just film around studios like Columbo episodes used to do to save money. And she dumps him and it's much more sort of gritty. It's not as glamorous isn't the right word for any of the Sweeney shows. But yeah, he's a much more kind of problematic character, someone to be pitied. His ex-wife says to him at one point, "Cool, you're 35 and you look more like 45.
It's true. Wild.
So, something happened in the series, I guess, where they, I don't know, made him, yeah.
Well, this will mean nothing to Conrad, but if with Maureen Lipman, we had BT from the BT ads, and in the Sweeney movie, the first one, the woman who's murdered at the start is Linda Bellingham, the OXO mom. How weird, John.
I was traumatized. I'd kind of forgotten about that part. And I was trying to think how to explain that to Conrad. And the nearest thing I could think of would be like, you know, the mum, in the Brady Bunch. If you saw her playing a sex worker, you know, it would just mind blown. You know, this was someone who did this whole, these commercials ran for like, I think, a decade, and Linda Bellingham played the mum, who again
that's wild.
Gender roles.
Yeah.
She's the matriarch cooking meals as the family get older and move on, and there she is playing a sex worker. It just doesn't seem right.
That generally because this partly these movies I thought were really funny to me because they did feel good, because they feel so much like a gritty TV show that's gotten a movie, and so they can be like R-rated now, you know, because these movies are pretty, especially the second one. are pretty violent in terms of the use of like squibs and like just having people be shot and die in car crashes and stuff. And there's a lot of nudity as well. Yeah. Like, you know, fair amount of like sort of, you know, B movie levels of like breasts and stuff like that feel very, it's the movie now, lads. Like, you know,
we don't
got the, any controls anymore, that kind of thing, you know.
And really, really gratuitous, you know, really just thrown in because it's like, well, like you say, because I think the first movie was an X, which back in the day meant you had to be 18 to see it. And then the second movie was a double A, meaning adult accompaniment. So I think 14
or so,
could go in. Because I remember not being allowed to see Westworld with Yul Brynner.
Yul Brynner.
Double A,
And his face came off. Comic book connections. We have got three British hard-nosed comic book coppers from the 70s, which I'm going to name check now, but except I'm going to get Conrad to do the middle one. We've got One-Eyed Jack, which I think was in the pages of Valiant in 1975. Dread obviously comes along in 1977. But in the middle, in Action Comic in 1976, we get...
Dredger! Dredger, get out there! Although going back to the film, Dredger, of course, is a secret agent and thus more involved in that sort of, you know, high stakes world of international espionage as opposed to workaday blaggers and thieves and things like that.
How would Dredger and his partner have got on with Regan and Carter, do you think, Conrad?
Well, I don't think they would, because I think... Regan would see Dredger as like from the, you know, from MI5 or whatever. So he's one of these geezers in a whistle and flute here to show us what we know and stuff like that, you know. But I think then they would both sort of torture somebody or something like that, you know. Shoot someone in the face in a crowded room and come to respect each other as time went by, you know.
Grudging respect for each other's off-the-book methods.
Exactly. You know, they'd kind of like, when they parted, they'd like threaten each other, but in sort of like with a smile behind it, you know. Can I ever see you again, sunshine, you know, that sort of thing.
So... Sweeney, with an exclamation mark, in 1977, apparently paid lots of money. And so they quickly went to another one. So let's take us, we'll perhaps spend some, I want to spend a little time talking about the next one, the sequel. So Conrad, take us into...
Film 2, Sweeney 2.
1978, directed by Tom Clegg, written by Ian and Troy Kennedy Martin, as you've mentioned, John, going back to the creators of the show, starring John Thor, Dennis Waterman, Denholm Elliott is in this one. In a nutshell, John, what's this one about?
Okay, so this one, again, it's supposedly inspired by real-life events. The real-life flying squad commander Ken Jury was convicted of corruption in 77, and the Denholm Elliott character is Jupp. So Jupp is inspired by this real life squad commander. Basically, we've got a group of particularly brutal gang of bank robbers, blaggers, avoiding capture. It's Jupp's sort of final request before he loses his job to Regan and Carter that they catch them. So they go off to try and find them. Along the way, we get these really bizarre subplots with a poison brewery and a hotel bomb that has to be defused that have nothing to do with the baggers. And then it turns out the gang of robbers live for some reason in a big villa in Malta with each other and their family. It's very family friendly. They all live in this lovely big villa in Malta. Regan and Carter get a little trip out there, only to be told by the authorities that they won't get any help. And then we get a final stakeout at a hotel. There's only the gang does one last blag. It goes wrong, and there's only two of the robbers left. And I found that interesting. It goes wrong not because of anything the Sweeney do, just because of the gang messing up. The last two gang members are left hiding out at this hotel. Regan and Carter try to stake them out, but the last robber kills himself rather than being arrested. The other robber gets shot by a police sniper in a very kind of dubious way without any warning. And then my last note is, and then Regan and his team go to the pub.
Now, I'll just say before I turn Conrad loose that the scene where Regan and Carter go to Malta, chat up air stewardesses on the plane on the way there, but then go to Malta to try and find the blaggers, except the blaggers have gone fishing and the Maltese police basically put them back on the plane. I can't prove this, but I'm pretty sure that John Thor and Dennis Waterman just wanted a holiday in Malta.
Oh, yeah.
You're right. Yeah.
You know, we'll do 2 days filming and 2 weeks holiday, you know.
Very much the Adam Sandler approach of, let's have the movie be set at this resort in Mexico. We'll do it there, you know.
Well, I kind of wonder if they read the script, saw that there was this villa in Malta that the baddies are in, and they
said to the producer,
hang on a minute, where's our trip to Malta? So, you know.
Now, Conrad, you mentioned that the first film is a bummer. Did you watch this one with your dad?
No, this one I watched on my own.
He'd had enough of my bed.
Right before that, you know, I had lost all capital. Like, I was basically visiting my dad for a long weekend, and this was the first thing we watched, and I lost all authority, credibility to suggest things for the rest of the weekend, basically. Like, for like 4 days, I was like, like the Sweeney, hey, like, you know, it's like, fine, you know, we'll go there for dinner instead, whatever, you know.
So apart from the last 5 minutes of the film when they're in the pub having a literal knees up, is anybody in this movie, Conrad, having a good time?
Yes. Regan manages to pull a bird at the hotel bombing, which takes 15 minutes and has no bearing on the rest of the film. But he manages to get a switchboard operator to come to his house. He like gives her his house key and says, hey, come by. But when she does, because that works, he's too drunk. He's passed out. And so she plays a prank. So he basically spends like 10 minutes like walking around his house, cleaning up a little bit, steals some keys, and then puts his house key, she undoes his pants and put his house key in there. And I was very worried for a moment, but then just puts, you know, but she basically pulls a little prank on him. And so I think she's having fun. Otherwise, everybody in this movie is at least like mid-level depressed, if not fully depressed at all times. Sorry. Also, the main squeeze of one of the robbers or one of the robbers' like assistants or something is he's this Nazi and she's this like Nazi hanger on.
Yes.
And she's done this like stag film for the rubber industry. And the lads at the Sweeney watch this thing and they're having a good time while they do that. Oh, wait, sorry. Also at the hotel bombing, because they just have to wait for Carter to help defuse the bomb, all the cop brass like realize they can get free drinks at the hotel bar, so they just kind of get drunk there as well. But like, there's a couple times, but every time else, this movie's gray and sad at all times. Mm.
And there's one more. The other one I thought maybe had a good time, which, again, I was just like, huh? Is, I should have mentioned that the robbers use those gold-plated Purdy shotguns.
Yeah, and I think those are pretty cool, actually.
There's the one scene where there's a little boy you see on a skateboard, which I thought was cool, 1978 and skateboards.
Absolutely.
And the one, this little boy finds one of these gold-plated shotguns that's been dropped by the robbers and picks it up and goes off on his skateboard. And that's the end. There's no, you know, Chekhov's pistol. There's a little kid out there with a gold-plated shotgun. And
there's a couple, yeah. There's a couple Chekhov guns, Chekhov's guns, because, like, the guy at the bombing turns out to be, like, a CIA guy or something. And, like, that could have, you know, theoretically could have helped with the international intrigue of, like, the guys in Malta or something. But now we're just, you know, all that left, you know. There's theoretically money on the table here, you know.
In 1978 Britain, Conrad, we didn't have skate parks or anything like that. So we had a kid on a skateboard in a multi-story car park. And actually...
Yeah. No, that seemed real to me.
Yeah, he pretty good skate.
Yeah. He was good. He didn't, you know, he was like pulling, do some ollies and stuff like that. I mean, in the 70s in America, you were lucky to like empty, basically, yeah, skate culture is being invented in 1978 in like empty swimming pools in Los Angeles. So like that seemed very much of its time, if not ahead of its time, honestly. I thought that was pretty cool, actually.
Yeah, I've forgotten that somewhere in 1978 Britain, there's a kid with a skateboard and a gold-plated shotgun.
Oh, that's a perfect timing for him to get issue one of Star-Lord with the skateboard squadron or whatever, patches. You know, yeah. Or the stickers in that is like a skateboard thing. Oh, man, that's a good time.
Yeah, I want to see that movie.
Absolutely.
Now, you've mentioned the bomb scene. There's a bomb disposal scene in the middle of this movie where Dennis Waterman's character, as you've said, is in the hotel room helping this unknown guy defuse a bomb for no reason. We're not really sure why this scene is in the movie. Downstairs in the bar, the police and various other agencies are having a jurisdictional debate as to who's in charge, which ends up basically with them all, as you say, Conrad, free drinks.
Absolutely.
I'm not sure if there's a guy upstairs defusing a bomb. I want to be in the hotel bar.
Yeah.
They seem very confident that it'll just take off the top couple floors, and they'll be fine, basically.
Yeah, and if I remember rightly, including the bomb disposal team who stay in the bar.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What are you having? You have a drink. Yeah.
It's basically just a snowman of, like, as time goes on, more and more brass show up and start getting pissed, basically.
Yeah, they're having a booze up down in the bar while Dennis Waterman is sort of like, which wire do we cut? Hold that very carefully. Yeah.
I guess it was done for comic relief. I was thinking, like, to answer your question, I guess, did they just think comic relief? And I also wondered, was it just to give Dennis Waterman something to do?
Yeah.
Because he's kind of more of a bit part in the first movie, isn't he? And I wonder if maybe, you know, he said, oh, I want something to do with you.
And I think they're just desperately trying to fill time. Like, in retrospect, there is a bunch of things in this movie that feel like we need, like, an extra 45 minutes for this movie or something like that. Yeah. So we're just going to linger on some scenes, add some extra things just to kind of, like pad things out a little bit.
Absolutely, yeah.
Now, we've got this gang of high-profile bank robbers who all live with their wives and girlfriends on this sort of villa estate in Malta with their wives, girlfriends and kids. When the kitty starts to run low, they pop back over to London to do another blag, but make sure you don't get wounded or twist your ankle in the blag, because then the leader will shoot you with his gold-plated shotgun. They're the ones stealing all the money. And then you see them having these meals round the table in Malta. Why are they so miserable?
Amazing. It's amazing. They just like they just have these like silent, icy stares at everyone. The only conversation is what new like debt they've got, you know, like, oh, there's a crack in the pool, we'll have to spend 20, you know, the guy who's fixed it says it'll cost 25,000, like, oh, we'll have to go back and make some more money then, and everybody gets real angry and this, like, yeah, it's hilarious. I thought of just that, like, you can't even like really have a good time when you're living the life of luxury with your childhood chums in an estate in paradise. You know, you've still got to deal with the wife. You've still got to like worry about minor finances and stuff like that. You know, it's ridiculous.
Who's going to fix the swimming pool, Conrad? Who's going to, you know?
Plus, it's all in the end turns out to be about like the British nation has fallen to corruption, and we've
that weird the reading of the will, isn't it? Yeah, that weird. Yeah, England is, or maybe we shouldn't go there at this time. But that, the weird reading of the, well, I don't know. Okay, I might be accused of reading too much into these films, but I did quite enjoy some of that, because there is the kind of one of the Maltese police refuse to help don't want to help, and one of them says something like, "This isn't the British Empire anymore." Which I thought was a kind of little line there, and the wives sell up the villa at the end, don't they? Because it's the robbers want it; it's their thing, and they're like, as soon as the husbands are gone, they're like, nope,
cash out,
cash out, we're off. Yeah. Which I thought, you know, there's some little positive things there, and. The only other thing I thought is, and again, I could have misunderstood this, because I can't believe I'm accusing these films of being subtle, but don't they kind of imply that the gang is working for the mob? There's a bit where someone in a suit comes to visit. And then they kind of say, "Oh, we're going to have to go and do one more job."
Yeah. There's always one more job because they've got to pay off somebody.
Which I thought was interesting too, taking it back to the first film, as it kind of implies that the real baddies get away. You know, the real baddies are the evil multinational companies or the mob. You know, so while the Sweeney is just dealing with the, you know, the robbers or the poisoners or whatever, you know, they're really just these small cogs in this, you know.
We've talked before about society's fears about rising crime and how you need a special breed of copper to solve this. As we get to the end of the second film, we seem to find a theme, which is this country's going to hell in a handcart. There's nothing you can do about it. Everything is getting worse, it seems, according to this film. Very bleak.
I want to say one more thing about the Sweeney too, which is that it had, actually we've mentioned both of them already, but it's got my two number one from 2000 AD ways of showing that someone's evil, I guess. You know, Eamon, you mentioned that, like, if when you're on the job, if you get like hurt or you're going to slow them down, you get killed right away, which is sort of a more modern one of you show your evil by killing your own guys, which happens a lot with baddies in 2000 AD. But also, we established one very early in a very early 2000 AD way, which is when you show someone's evil by just having them be a big fan of Hitler, basically.
Yes. Yes, in absolutely.
The, in I greatest did think Judge of you for Cal, that. Call me Kenneth traditions, you know, yeah. That kind of stuff.
I did think of you for that, Conrad. When they walk in, again, it's like, whoa, they walk into a room and there's a great big swastika on the wall. And I thought, oh, Conrad's going to notice that.
Guys, the baddies. There we go. You know.
And that kind of weird kind of, not weird, but just, and I know you've, I've heard you talk about this, that kind of thing where it does sort of seem that growing up in the 70s, we were all kind of a little bit in the UK obsessed with,
Yeah. The wall.
You know, it happens. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's sort of always there for sure.
Yeah. And you could, it looks, it's probably one of the, you mentioned gender politics, but it's probably one of the bits that's dated the worst is that they, that Regan interviews this, you know, or interrogates this guy, this sort of, he's peripherally connected to the Blaggers.
Yeah.
And he does so in this guy's flat or house, which is full of his Nazi memorabilia.
Yeah. It's like,
are you going to mention it? You know?
And I don't think they even comment on it, do they? It's just there. It's just no one reacts to it or says anything. It's just it's just there. Yeah.
Okay, so now the Sweeney, like I say, was very successful on TV and on film, John, and there were spin-offs to mention. Let's talk about a few.
So, meaning that, well, Euston Films and Minder, that we, I guess we could talk about.
Minder becomes a big thing, yes, huge for Dennis Waterman and what was his name?
George Cole,
that was it, But also in terms of spin-offs into stickers and comics and books.
Absolutely. Well, that was the other thing I found really interesting too, is so the Sweeney, so like we said, the movies, the first movie's an X, the second film's a double A. The TV series is shown at 9 p.m., so
children can't watch.
Yeah, so in the UK, Conrad, we had this thing called the Watershed, you know.
And I'm familiar with that, yeah. And, you know, I mean, we have similar sort of, like, I don't think it's an official definition or anything like that, but, in the States, they have, like, 9 p.m. or 10 p.m., that's where sort of the, you know, even on network TV, that's where you sort of expect more adult shows and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. So, but what I find just quite amusing is there were also kind of kids' toys and merchandise done around this
amazing.
I mean, I know we're kind of more used to that now because, you know, we've had that with the Alien movies and RoboCop and Rambo and stuff. But there were annuals, you know, the hardback. Yeah, you all know what annuals. There was the hardback annuals. There were at least three hardback annuals you could get at Christmas in your stocking, which had their little features, and comic strips. Did have some comic strips in them by, who was the art?
Brian Lewis. Astonishing artist, Brian Lewis, yes.
Yeah.
And sadly died probably before he got to work on 2000 AD because he died young. But yeah, an astonishing artist in the 70s.
So he would be quite familiar to people listening to the book club. We had one of my favourite ones that I don't know if you saw the link I sent you is the Lectra set.
Yeah.
Now, when I was a kid, this was a big deal.
Electroset stickers, yeah.
Transfers, Conrad. We used to get them on cereal packets, and you would get your little transfers, and there would be like a diorama on the back of the cereal packet.
I'm familiar with that sort of thing,
And you would, you know, get your pencil.
Rubber penny.
Wow.
So
there's a Sweeney set where you get your Sweeney diorama, and the situation is called Hijack, and it's a bunch of Blaggers stealing meat from a from a refrigerated truck.
It's the 70s.
And you can put all your little transfers in, and you've got the cops, and you've got the Blaggers, and you've got, you know, Regan and Carter, and da da da. But the one, again, maybe I'm overreaching, but the one that I just always draws my attention is one of the images is one of the robbers threatening a fallen uniformed police officer.
Oh,
and it, and I just see a certain action. Indeed. Cover.
Going aggro.
And Carlos cover.
Yeah. Oh,
but, the one that caused all the fuss.
Yeah. But there you are in Lectroset, Sweeney. You could recreate a kind of little version of that scene and nothing is said. So
perfectly safe for kids. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and and the only other one, and I'm really annoyed about this, I missed it because there was a secondhand shop, charity shop near me here, and they had this, the Sweeney board game. But the last time I look, it looked like someone had nabbed it before me. So there you go. You could read your Sweeney annual at Christmas, and play the board game with your family. And then, you know.
Not sure Conrad's dad will be up
I know
that,
my dad's but... getting for Christmas. I'll tell you that much. I really, like, I'm really imagining both the annual and the game as having elements of, like, yeah. Regan getting pissed or whatever.
You know? I don't know. I vaguely remember. I don't know if I had. Oh, and the car. They did the car as yeah. well. They did the, it's a Ford Council or something like that. But anyway, you could get the kind of little toy car that you could play with as well.
Oh, absolutely.
So, I just find that fascinating that something that's, you know, primarily a show for grown-ups, yet as a kid.
Got all these kid stuff. Yeah.
You've got all these toys and cars and books and what have you. So I just find that fascinating.
Now, possibly the best remake or sequel to The Sweeney is, I'm going to say, Life on Mars and Ashes to Ashes, John.
Yeah, which I believe they did an American version as well.
They did Life on Mars in America, yes.
With Harvey Keitel as the... So basically...
He plays Gene Hunt in the American, yeah.
Gene Hunt is I think, the creators of Life on Mars all but said, yeah, Gene Hunt is Regan.
Yeah.
You know, that was the template they took. And then that was their kind of way of kind of commenting. That was the juxtaposition, wasn't it?
Back
of the kind of 70s cop, which when was Life on Mars? What was that, the noughties,
In the noughties, yeah. Obviously a big hit and took everybody back to those 70s clothes, cars, strange attitudes to women and lots of alcohol and tobacco use at work. You know? Yeah.
I mean, that is the thing you've alluded to, just watching the movies and the TV show is just how just grey and dirty and bleak and everything, you know, like, you know, looking at London, you know, this version of London of the 70s and all of this wasteland, yeah, that like the abandoned warehouses and I think Eamon, you said where you could actually, you know, park
when you can drive central, and park,
yeah. and a copper can afford a flat in Putney
Dennis Waterman's got his flat and can afford it and can entertain his air hostess girlfriends,
and there's a lot of people drinking tea out of polystyrene cups outside of sort of burger vans and that, you know.
Yeah. No wonder they all wanted to drink whiskey as soon as they got to work. As you say, Conrad, everybody in the second film particularly is so depressed. It's just, you know. Now, a film that Conrad hasn't seen and that we're going to recommend that people don't watch is, of course, the 2012 remake of The Sweeney, which starred Ray Winston, Ben Drew as Regan and Carter with Damian Lewis and Hayley Atwell in it as well. John and I have had the misfortune of watching this and now both wish we hadn't paid any money to do so.
I was ordered not to bother.
The remake is offensively stupid, John.
Yeah. What was I think? Hashtag not my Sweeney. It's insult to injury. The other bit of, because it came out in 2012 and in the UK it knocked Dread off the number one spot of the box office charts.
No.
So just there, yeah, just to add insult to injury.
Dear, now I'm even more depressed about it.
We should just end there and have the slowed down Sweeney theme tune to play as well.
Well, the remake version, Conrad, which you haven't seen, and as I say, we're going to say you shouldn't see it. I did mention this already previously in an email. It is a bit like Team America World Police in that the Sweeney in 2012 kill a lot of people, destroy a lot of property, and then declare it a win.
Yes. Yeah. And Regan swears a lot and has an affair with a woman much too young for him.
30 years younger than him.
So
that seems
that seems on brand.
Then we learned that actually John Thaw is like of the same age of the ladies, but just looks 30 years older. So yeah, it's sort of a different situation.
And of course, it is a 2000 AD connection ish because it's Hayley Atwell, who of course is going to be the Rogue Trooper movie.
We're going to hear her in Rogue Trooper, yes. Mm. Whenever that gets a release date. But, yeah.
And hopefully she'll have a better role in that.
So we sometimes end these film reviews by recommending these films. We've got, if we're going reverse order, the 2012 remake is a definite no. Thumbs down from us here on the Film Club. What about the first two films, Conrad? Would you recommend them to anyone?
No, like, I would say, like, maybe you've got, like, you guys clearly have nostalgia, especially for, like, this sort of London and these, you know, these characters, this sort of thing. If you're coming at it with that, then I would say give it a look. Actually, I, you know, going back to our previous episode with, like, Dirty Harry, part of what I really loved about Dirty Harry was seeing sort of, you know, 70s like grimy 70s San Francisco in the same way that you guys are talking about London here. Mm. And so I think that if that's something that, that holds something for you, then I think it is worth taking a look at just to kind of like, see that setting in, you know, in its time. You know, as sort of a historical time capsule or something like that. Otherwise, there's better Cop on the Edge movies. Yeah. Like, you know, maybe if you need the Cop on the Edge movie to be English specifically, it might be a good choice. But like, there's nothing in these Sweeney movies that isn't done better elsewhere, I would say. And so the nostalgia really is the key unique selling point for these films. And if that doesn't really hold anything for you, then they're pretty skippable.
Okay.
Conrad, could I ask, I'm really interested in what you think of them. Could you see anything in them that connects to your reading of stuff like Action and 2000?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I think especially actually thinking about Dredger, you know, where it's got a lot of the themes, it like not the crimes themselves, I guess, but like a lot of that sort of class interplay, I suppose, you know, between Dredger and Breed, his partner, and like the higher ups in you know, in MI5 or whatever. Very similar to what Regan's always coming up against in both the show and the movies, honestly, as well. Just, you know, with like when he sort of comes up against the bosses and things like that. You know, this like Dirty Harry, a big thing in all these Sweeney movies is trying to get evidence. Can you prove it? That kind of thing. And that feels very familiar, especially to Dredger, I think, or sort of just the clashing of like, you know, I can't agree with your methods and stuff. And I think it's that, and it's those restrictions that then I think Dredd, you know, we're sort of glorying in Dredd not having to worry about, basically, that as judge, jury, and executioner, we're cheering for Dredd because he doesn't have these handcuffs that the coppers have to deal with, you know, in the 70s, and that's why everything's falling to pot or something like that. In the view of the time, this is not my personal view, but this feels like sort of what people are bringing to it within the fiction of the time and stuff like that.
Absolutely. I kind of see it as having it's interesting you said that. I was thinking of it a bit like Dredd. I guess one of the, if I was going to be mean, people say, you know, Dredd kind of has its cake and eats it, and the Sweeney, you can you could kind of see the same thing, you know, that we've got these cops on the edge breaking the rules, and we can go, oh, that's terrible. Look at them breaking the rules as we're going, go on, punch them.
Yeah. You know.
So, yeah. John, do you recommend them as anything other than historical documents?
Maybe, yeah, I guess Conrad's right. It's nostalgic. I kind of like them. When I first watched them, I thought, oh my God, what have I done? I thought, oh, this would be funny to get Conrad's reaction to them. And then after I actually sat down and watched them, within 5 minutes of starting the first film, I was thought, I've made a terrible mistake. I'm so sorry. but the more I kind of, I don't know, I have kind of, I think maybe for me it's difficult for me to separate them from the TV series too, because I kind of think of them as that whole thing. One thing I think we've alluded to, it's such a shame that the movies don't have the theme music of the TV show, because the TV was such this kind of iconic, and I guess that was probably a rights issue, wasn't it? When
they must have been, I guess, with the composer or something, that they couldn't use it. Does seem strange.
Yeah, maybe it's as historical documents, but I do find them interesting, though. The more I dig into them, I do, because they're rubbish cops. That's the thing. They're terrible.
Yeah.
The end of Sweeney 2, right? They make no difference to the event. They're more like the Keystone cops. When they're trying to get into the hotel, they're scrabbling over walls and trying to get through windows, hanging from the gutters, and they're these awful, terrible, ineffectual cops. Like you said, they're hungover and they miss appointments, and yeah, they don't really make any difference. Like, the real villains are out there, and they never catch the real villains, you know, the real people behind the throne. So for that, I don't know. Maybe I am romanticising it all, but I do just find that there's a little bit more to them. If you look at, Sweeney 2, for example, the whole, if you remember the beginning, the whole opening of the Sweeney 2 happens off camera, because we're just told that, we just see the aftermath, don't we? We see the crash cars.
Yeah.
We're told that a hostage dies. We're told that a bank robber has died. And we get told, Carter's in a lot of trouble here because this went terribly wrong. And you're kind of, you know, as far as the genre goes, you're kind of on Carter's side, because that's the way you're supposed to be. Oh, you stupid police chief, you don't understand their methods. And then actually, by the time you get to the end, you think, actually, maybe they did screw up at the beginning, you know, because everything else we've seen has kind of led us to believe these guys are awful. So I don't know if that was the intention of the writers, but looking at it now, it's just something that comes across to me. I don't know. There you go.
Indeed. So the Sweeney, hard-nosed British coppers from the 70s, drinking, smoking, and screwing things up.
How about you, Eamon?
Yeah, what do you think,
Eamon? Would you recommend them?
So don't watch the remake from 2012. It's terrible. It's offensively stupid. I think Sweeney 2 is interesting just because how miserable everybody is in that film, which is delightful. Plus the inexplicable comedy of the bomb disposal scene and more senior police officers turning up downstairs to have a drink. So that's all right. The first film, no, I wouldn't recommend the first film. I'd rather watch the TV series, as you say. That seems more like it to me.
If you get a chance, Eamon, because in the UK, you get ITVX.
Yes.
They've got the whole four series on ITVX, not the pilot.
Right.
If you want to see a weird episode, go to season 4. There's a whole episode where the guest stars are Morecambe and Wise.
70s classics, have to have them.
So
there we go. Right. Obviously, the Film Club will return. Until then, we're going to say where people can find you on the net. Conrad?
Space Spinner 2000. We're talking about 2000 AD, the Judge Dredd magazine. We're continuing our way through 1995, nearly done, and then into terrifying waters of 1996. Oh, it's an amazing time.
Splendid stuff. John, anything to point our listeners at the moment? Anything written recently?
You can find me on Mastodon. I don't know if anyone else uses that. I think it's just you and me on that.
Yeah, it's just you and me. Yes.
And I'm on Facebook. I've got a couple of things coming up. I think when I saw you last, I told you I've been doing some writing on the EC horror comics.
Oh, nice.
And their connection to the kind of creep show TV show. I've just sent something off to the editors to be put in a collection. So hopefully, these things move slowly, but hopefully there'll be something out about that soon.
Excellent. I'll hopefully link to that if I can when this episode comes out or afterwards. And you can find all of this at megacitybookclub.com, including links to John's work and Conrad's work. And that's it. Until next time, if you have a film that you can relate to British comics in some way, if no one else can help, and if you can find us, maybe you can join the Megacity Film Club by emailing mcbcpodcast@gmail.com. Come and join Conrad and me in Old School Film Club. Until next time, in our best Cockney accents, I'm Eamon.
I'm Conrad.
I'm John.
And we have been
Mega City Film Club, sunshine.
Get your trousers on, you're nicked.